5, 4, 3, 2. You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. Good evening, I'm Al Vona. The issue this week, and one that I think is probably near and dear to many people's heart, is the increase and the rise in this country of elder abuse. It could be parents, it could be a close friend, it could be anybody that we know. And when they get to a certain age and they can no longer do for themselves, it's not unusual. I'm sure every one of us has either read a story in the newspaper, seen a segment on television of how elderly are taken advantage of in the forms of abuse can range from physical to mental and much more under that umbrella. And I've asked my guest this week, attorney Glenn Madigan, from Michigan, to join me. And I asked Glenn specifically this week because he's in a different part of the country. But I want listeners to realize that this is an issue that is pervasive, not just here in our own corner of the world up here in New England or the Northeast, but this is something that's happening all over the country. Glenn's firm specializes in elder law, and we're talking for the next half hour about elder abuse. Who are the victims? What happens? What is happening? And what you, as a caretaker or a close loved one, can do? Glenn, nice to have you with us.
Al, thanks for having me.
Again, as I said at the opening, I'm glad we're able to have you on because a lot of times when people say, well, yeah, you know, maybe you've got a bigger problem up there in New England than we have anywhere else in the country. I don't believe that. I don't think you do either. I'm assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, that elderly abuse can happen anywhere in the country.
Al, yeah, this is a universal problem that we see. Obviously, I'm in the Midwest, you are out East, and, you know, we see, you know, our society is you know, similar across the country. We tend to favor youth. You know, growing old is not glamorous, and I think that is one of the reasons why I think our elderly are ignored sometimes. Sometimes we see family has spread out across the country, across the world, so it's much harder to monitor our mothers, our fathers, our family members when we live so far away. And I think baby boomers are aging very fast, and the industry is barely able to keep up. So when you need professional caregivers, you have to make sure, you know, people are trained and you know, you get the right people and you screen them. And so, yes, it is a universal problem from the West Coast to the East Coast and everywhere in between.
I have heard, and I'm sure you've heard this more than I do because you do this for a living, but and I'm talking about just recently, two particular instances. One obviously was the physical side of it, as you talked about. A caretaker had come into a family home. The elderly man had passed on, but the mother was living by herself. She was pretty adamant about staying put for as long as she could, and they had a caretaker come in. But that caretaker, started to become very physical, especially when she would ask the woman to do something. On the other side, the other story was especially when caretakers, and it doesn't just have to be someone that comes into your house. I suppose this crosses many boundaries. That would be retirement communities, nursing homes. When they find out that you've got some assets, you've got some financial assets, a lot of money in the bank or maybe some properties, that's also another form of abuse, is it not?
It is, and there are really five major types of elder abuse that we deal with. You mentioned the physical, whether it's hitting or slapping. You know, we've seen pushing and kicking, and it's a horrible situation. Restraining someone from doing what they would like to do, even giving improper or excessive medication, withholding treatment, withholding medication. That's on the physical side. The other one you mentioned was the financial abuse, the exploitation, whether it is misappropriation of money. We see this probably in my area, the elder law area. This is what we see, where one of the sons or daughters comes into the office and says, gosh, mom had, $700,000, and, I'm seeing her bank accounts are starting to dwindle, you know, what's going on. My brother's been taking care of her, you know, her finances. You know, these are the ones we see probably more than the physical abuse. The physical abuse is reported to the police. It's reported to the Adult Protective Services. But on the financial side, we see this on a regular basis. So you've got the physical, you've got the financial. Emotional abuse is common. You know, somebody, you know, verbally abuses, yelling, name calling, or sometimes nonverbal forms such as, you know, you just ignore or give someone the silent treatment is emotional abuse. And then we have, you know, sexual abuse. And then the one that I think is overlooked the most and unreported the most is just neglect. Where a senior is living on their own and they are, you know, trying to take care of themselves, doing the best job they can, but they are being neglected, whether it's intentionally or whether out of lack of knowledge or resources of how to, you know, how to deal with it.
I have seen, I've heard, you know, it's difficult to be someplace 24/7, but just as you were talking about the neglect side, many times in my own neighborhood, you know, an elderly person, and not because someone doesn't want to visit, as you said, maybe, you know, in society today is spread out more so than it was perhaps 40, 50 years ago. So family members are not there 24/7, you know, one spouse or the other is perhaps passed on. The person doesn't get out, but you know that's certainly very common. But again, going back to what you said earlier, and I think you're absolutely right. I think it's probably very pervasive. Is that financial side? But let me ask you. You know, you raise. Let's say you have a son and a daughter. You know, some people say, well, I want one of the kids to be the trustee. I want one of the kids to be the person to oversee my financial. My financial well-being, you don't know. I mean, up until that point, that child has been, you know, fine, no issues. But then when they see or when they have that access to the money. So, I mean, the question I'm asking is, what does an elderly person do long before they can no longer do for themselves? How do you set it up? I mean, especially when you've got more than one child. I mean, is it smart to even delegate a child, or should you use somebody on the outside?
So I think it depends on the circumstances. We use children on a regular basis, but I am big on transparency. So if one son or one daughter is in charge, I want the other children to be able to access accounts or access information so that there's transparency in the event of incapacity. And, you know, incapacity is a broad range, a very big gray area. And generally speaking, when you've got your full capacity, you're fine. When you have no capacity, you've got someone watching over you 24/7. It's that gray area in the middle where we see this elder abuse most often, is where someone is vulnerable. They are forgetful. They don't, you know, they don't really understand the overall picture of what's going on. And so in those cases, we want, you know, for sure a general durable power of attorney in place. We want, generally speaking, a trust in place that is going to deal with the financial side of things. But you want to build into those things transparency so other family members can step in and see what's going on. And then, of course, you have the medical side. You know, you have what's called a patient advocate designation, living will, healthcare, power of attorney. It's called different things across the country. But you're putting a point person in charge if you can't carry out your own medical wishes anymore to carry out those wishes for you. But you can also have what's called a HIPAA authorization. HIPAA is that Federal Privacy Act, and anyone on your HIPAA list can talk to doctors and nurses and hospitals. And so we might have one child that's the point person with the doctors, but we have all of the children on the HIPAA authorization that would allow them to at least keep track of what's going on with the, you know, on the medical side.
Glenn, so often, let's say a couple marries, you know, married 20, 30, 40 years, you know, they accumulate assets, and I'm talking about liquid assets, cash in the bank. One or the other passes on, and as we've been talking about, you've got one parent left who's no longer able to do for themselves. And as you talked about, typically a child, one of the children will be designated, but with transparency for all the others to know, see what's going on. But let me ask you, let's go a step further. do insurance companies that the family has perhaps done business with for years? Does the primary care physician, does the bank, when they see that huge sums of money have been withdrawn in a short period of time, do any of those folks have any kind of responsibility, legal or otherwise, to notify family members in general that, hey, I just want to make you aware. I know you said transparency, which would give access to bank accounts for all. But as you well know, as I do, some believe that, well, you know, our older brother is taking care of it. I never questioned him or I never questioned her. And only when it's too late. So again, do outside entities that the family has done business with for many years have any responsibility to send up a red flag?
It's interesting because they've gotten better at sending up the red flag, but they have shielded themselves from the legal responsibility. So if I add myself on my mother's bank account, for example, there's a specific statute in our state that says I can go withdraw every dime out of that, you know, out of that bank account at any time. And the bank has no responsibility to my mother or to me. I may have responsibility to my mother, but the bank doesn't have any responsibility because they've built in these statutory shields that would allow them to, and you can understand from a bank standpoint, with commerce as fast as it is right now, if someone walks into the bank and wants to withdraw money, it's very hard for them to do a background check or see, you know, what's going on, you know, totally in the background. So I understand from a commerce standpoint, it's almost got to be that way. Where we are seeing the banks getting better is if one of the kids walks into the bank with mom or dad in a vulnerable position and says, we need to take out $1,000 cash or $5,000 cash, they will sometimes go back and sit down in the manager's office and discuss what's going on and see if the senior is, you know, in agreement with it or, you know, what's going on behind the scenes.
It's just good to know that there is some elevated assurance, if you will, that somebody is, that third party, that outside entity is keeping an eye on things like that. Let me ask you, how often, from your experience, how often does a child, you would hate to think, that boy or girl that you raised, that you gave everything to over the years, would do such a thing. But how is that pretty prevalent? Is that happened frequently?
So one recent study indicated that 90% of the exploitation tends to be a family member of some sort, most often the children or grandchildren. Mm. And so it's a significant amount.
So it must be difficult for you. I mean, you're kind of putting yourself, I know this is what you do for a living and you're there for the client, but when you sit with family members, I'm assuming that the elder is brought in, whatever siblings are there, especially the one designated to be, the person in charge of finances. How often does it get, does it escalate to the point where, all of a sudden the parent takes a step back and says, wait a minute, I'm listening to you talk and I never heard you talk like that. And then you have to come in and kind of play referee and say, well, I don't want to say that your child is going to steal from you, but their tone of voice right now, their frame of mind lends itself to something like that. I mean, how difficult or how far can you go as an attorney before you cross a line and say, well, I basically just said your kid's a crook?
Yeah, we do on occasion go there. We try to do it a little more delicately than that. but from that standpoint, we end up in what I would call more of a mediator or facilitator situation in a lot of meetings. The first meeting we have, generally speaking, is going to be alone with the client. And so, of course, the red flag, if daughter brings mom in and says, guess what, mom wants to leave me everything, that's a huge red flag. Mm. And, immediately the daughter's removed from the room and we sit down and have a discussion with mom about what's going on. But when we see some things going on in the background, and so you will, I think that the studies have shown if you have a child that has had, has been, for example, unemployed, a child who's got some mental illness, You've got a child that has financial problems. Those are risk factors in determining whether they are going to ultimately, and again, it's nothing set in stone, but those are a higher percentage of the abusers.
I'm just glad that, you know, at least you guys are able to, you know, you pick up on, it seems like you pick up on that right away, and, you know, you handle it tactfully, hopefully getting, you know, getting this rectified before it gets to the point where, as you said earlier, that they lose everything. I want to take a quick pause, let folks know that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. This is Al Voner, and you're listening to The Public Eye. My guest this week is Michigan attorney Glenn Madigan. We're talking about an issue that is just only going to get worse as time goes on. Elder abuse here in this country, especially when it comes to assets, financial assets, how often this takes place. Glenn specializes in this type of work. And Glenn, I think you hit the nail right on the head. I mean, I'm a baby boomer. I remember taking care of my folks. And thank God, you know, that we were there for them. But I'm, as you said, I'm sure as the baby boomers, we're 60s, we're in our 70s now. The next 10 years, you know, this alone, it sounds like this will only get worse. Am I forecasting something, more than it has to be?
No, I think you're exactly right, and I think two reasons. Again, the boomers are getting older, and so we are all going to be there at some point. We are seeing dementia. We're seeing Alzheimer's growing as far as diseases, and again, that's a risk factor. If you have a memory issue, you're more likely to be abused, whether it's financially or physically. And again, the more older folks we have, the more opportunities there are for, you know, whether it's family members or whether it's, caregivers, other people to step in and take advantage.
Do we need, on the books I'm talking about, whether it's at the federal level, state level, local level, do we need tougher elder laws to protect, especially now where, as we've been talking about, the elder, the baby boomers are getting older, it's going to be a larger percentage where we see chances of abuse. Are the laws that currently exist on the books today adequate, or do we need tougher enforcement?
We do need, so I think two things. I think we need tougher laws, and the laws are getting there. There's a disconnect between the laws and the enforcement. For example, there's an Elder Justice Task Force. It's federal. There's Attorney General's Advisory Committee, Elder Justice Subcommittee, Department of Justice, Elder, Justice Coordinator. There's all of these positions there that are relatively new. Most states and counties have elder law task force. For example, our county is now putting together a task force that is a combination of the prosecutor's office and community mental health and Department of Health and Human Services, where they all get together and talk about elder abuse and how to coordinate. Because again, number one, it's not reported as much as it should be, and so people have to know the warning signs. For example, I just noticed there was some training. I don't know if you have Meals on Wheels. Meals on Wheels,
yep,
is a great service,
right,
bringing food out to seniors. Well, they're training the people that are bringing food out to see the warning signs for elder abuse so that they can come back and report if they see something out of the ordinary, whether it's physical, financially, emotional. And so I think the training is a huge issue that needs to be dealt with to get everyone on the same page. Then the reporting, of course, has to step up. But once the reporting is there, I think that's where we lack the push right now, is in the prosecution of the, going after the people that are doing this.
And that's unfortunate, because I think you'd agree that when we think of, when we think of law enforcement, when we think of laws, we think, well, that's if somebody goes in and hurts somebody, kills somebody, robs a bank. Those are the kind of characters we should be after. But you know what? If somebody is abusing an elder, whether it's their mom and dad, a grandmother, a grandfather, a close friend, whatever it may be, either, like you said, physically, psychologically, financially, which seems to be the most prevalent, then there should be tough laws on the books for that situation as well. I got to ask you this, because it's been in my mind now for the past week. I'm sure in your career, you have seen some substantial estates where, as we've been talking about, one of the children, son, daughter, whatever it may be, among other siblings, becomes the main finance person. Is there one case in your mind that you recall, and that, we don't need names or anything like that, but I'm just thinking something that you can recall where vast sums of money were just totally, totally extinguished by that person in charge, leaving mom or dad basically, you know, poor, broke, with nothing?
See, I have two cases that come to mind right away. One happened to be an older gentleman. He was a World War II veteran. He was in his 90s, and he had no children. His wife had passed away, I think it was about 10 years before, and he had 13 nieces and nephews, and they all cared for him. They took turns visiting. One of them was an accountant, handled the books, and so they were doing very well, taking care of him. And all of a sudden, he hired a caregiver, and she was 60 years old, and she was helping him here and there. Met her at a coffee shop somewhere, which again is a first first warning sign is it's not a professional caregiver. And within about a month after he brought her in, she was living in his house. The niece noticed, that was handling the finances, noticed that her name was now on the bank accounts.
Mm.
And this was a over $1 million estate. And we started to make the phone calls, called him and started to talk to him. And he was very vulnerable, very forgetful, early to mid-stage dementia. And in the long haul, her name ended up going on his house. We filed a petition with the court because we couldn't get information anymore. He took the niece's name off of the computer, or she did, somebody did, off of the bank accounts, so we couldn't access any of the bank accounts anymore. And literally the day before, or I think it was a couple days before we had our petition before the judge, this caregiver took the gentleman to the local justice of the peace and married him.
Oh,
and so she showed up in court and said, "Judge, I'm his wife." And thankfully, the judge was not having any of it, and we were able to undo much of what had been done. That is one one situation that we dealt with that stands out. And I think the reason that happened is there were no children. And I think when caregivers or people who are out to take advantage, they look for situations where there is not someone extremely close that is there all the time. And I think in that case that fit the bill. The other one is a son, specific situation where when dad passed away, mom was left. Mom was taken to the son's lawyer, took the sister off. Okay, this was the son and daughter only. Took the sister off as trustee, off as power of attorney, off as the patient advocate on the medical side. And immediately, when the son took over a financial side, he wrote himself a $30,000 check. Literally, on the way home from the lawyer's office, he wrote himself a check. And over the years, as we fought in court about it, we found out that he had taken more and more and more, and he had had the trust redone to have his sister almost cut out, not totally. I think it was 90%, 10%, but effectively cut out of a large estate. And ultimately, we were able to get relief there also. But if you think about, even larger estates, million, 2 million, estates, you're fighting with the elder's money.
Yeah.
And so there's lots of attorney fees going out to try to make, I'll make sure that they do not get abused, and that's not really fair to them.
Right, right. It's heartbreaking. As you were talking, everybody, listeners, I'm sure everybody knows somebody where they've heard, it's either happened to them directly or happened to close friends, or they've heard about it happening to someone. But I'm glad that you brought that to the surface, and that's why I asked the question, because, as flagrant as it sounds, people will go to no ends to enjoy themselves, to enrich themselves, and this is certainly two cases like that. But going back to that interesting one with the what, I didn't even think about that, Glenn, and I'm sure that happens more often than not, especially with an elderly guy. The wife passes away so many times. I visit retirement communities regularly, and I can tell you that, the women will get together if they've lost their spouse, and there's always a social support. I think for some reason females seem to do that a better job of that than the guys. Inevitably, one or two guys is hanging on, but they're on the peripheral of the room. They're not quite interacting with other people, and they seem, in my mind, I'm thinking just what you were talking about. All it takes is for one, somebody. I don't want to point the finger at females, but in this case, it was someone who probably made promise to, "Oh, I love you. This is, I can't believe we met in this way, and if we become husband and wife, everything'll be handy dandy." But by doing that, I guess my question would be: by doing that, if she had gotten away with it, everything would have gone to her, right? Upon his death?
Exactly.
Wow.
Yes, exactly. As a spouse, you're, and again, he had the estate plan changed at the same time that the bank accounts and the house were being changed over. He had estate plan changed, and thankfully, the attorney was, dumb enough, but the videotape the signing, and it was very clear that the husband was out of it and continuously looked at his wife, and she was directing him what to do, and so in this case we were lucky enough to have a video.
Wow. It's chilling. It really is, and I think anybody listening to the broadcast, got to be aware. You got to be on top of these things. As Glenn has pointed out this evening, there are just so many opportunities, especially as the baby boomers start to age. We're going to have a vast percentage of the population aging, and these circumstances are only going to get worse before they get better. Glenn, real quick, obviously this is such an important issue, and I know you're out there in the Midwest, and I specifically wanted to get a viewpoint from outside the local listening area, and that's why we were glad we were able to have you on. But if people want to get more information about your work, about elder abuse, where might they reach you?
Well, we have a website. It's real easy to remember. It's called seniorlawradio.com, seniorlawradio.com. And we've got lots of videos. We've got blogs, content that people can take a look at and learn some additional information about the things we've been talking about.
Yeah. And as I said, I can't reiterate, I've said it a couple of times already this evening, but elder abuse is happening right in front of us, ladies and gentlemen. It's something that just is pervasive, and we need to be more diligent and care for our elders as they did for us. So so glad we're able to have Attorney Glenn Madigan on talking about the issue of elder abuse. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments or questions or feedback to me directly. I certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. Again, thanks to Glenn Madigan for joining us this evening on The Public Eye, talking about elder abuse. For The Public Eye, this is Al Vona.